This is UN and Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Matthew Wells. In this week's programme, corruption remains the biggest challenge facing post-conflict Liberia, the UN's police commissioner there tells us, and we've a special report on Egypt's forgotten refugees. But first, a deadly ambush of UN peacekeepers in Mali just a few days ago has highlighted the dangerous landscape in which many blue helmets have to operate. The UN Security Council has been looking at ways to strengthen support to field missions so that they can better respond to threats such as terrorism, violent extremism and organised crime. Deanne Penn reports.
The United Nations has condemned the attack which killed two civilians and a peacekeeper serving at the UN mission in Mali or MINUSMA, in addition to wounding several of his colleagues. Up to two-thirds of the organization's peacekeeping staff are working in areas affected by terrorism, according to one of the UN's senior experts on counterterrorism, Jean-Paul Laborde. He spoke through an interpreter.
As long as terrorists and their organizations continue to spread fear and horror through these attacks, the peoples living in these countries, the staff of the United Nations, the officers of the United Nations will also be their targets. We mustn't forget terrorism, violent extremism, and organized crime are threats to international peace and security, and they put the United Nations peacekeeping operations in a new vulnerability and a growing invulnerability because of these three elements.
Terrorism also puts neighboring states at risk, according to Michel Jean, head of La Francophonie, the Association of the World's French-speaking countries. Almost half of the UN's 16 peacekeeping operations are located in countries where the language is spoken. She also spoke through an interpreter.
We saw very recently how the army of Niger was victim of an attack carried out by criminal militias on the 6th of October this year. In that attack, 22 soldiers who were providing security for a Malian refugee site in Tahoua region on the border of Mali were killed in broad daylight. The sub-region is seeking for MINUSMA to be in a place to, in the implementation of its mandate, to be able to act more tactically and in a more robust way, and that it can do so on the basis of greater dialogue and greater coordination with neighbouring countries and with target countries.
Since terrorism and violent extremism thrive in environments where governments have failed or where there is impunity, peacekeeping will need to be more nimble, UN Deputy Secretary General Jan Eliasson told the chamber.
Developing our intelligence and analysis capacity will be critical in this pursuit. We will also need to adjust how we conduct our core tasks, including our good offices, our capacity building, our community engagement, and stabilization measures.
Mr. Ellison said the UN will also have to ensure that the political objectives of its peacekeeping operations are clearly defined and communicated. He also called for new and creative ways to achieve political goals, particularly in conflict situations where some parties may not be what he called speaking partners or willing participants. Deanne Penn, United Nations.
Corruption remains the biggest challenge for Liberia as it continues its recovery from a brutal civil war. That's according to the police commissioner of the UN peacekeeping mission there. UNMIL has been supporting the West African country since 2003, following the end of the conflict. But as long-term peace and stability returns, the mission's been drawing down and handing security responsibilities over to the national authorities. Daniel Dickinson's been speaking to Police Commissioner Greg Hines at UN headquarters in New York. He began by asking to what extent UNMIL's been a UN police and peacekeeping success story.
Since 2003, the UN, UNMIL, has been part of Liberia. Initially, it was about peacemaking, and we were able to successfully achieve that in a relatively short period of time. Since then, we've been in a peacekeeping, but also in a peace-building mode, very much more recently geared towards consolidating peace and the gains that have been made about professionalising the justice and security framework to ensure that there was a security framework in place to allow peace and other development and reform agendas to take place.
And what do Liberians say about your performance?
What we hear from the Liberian people is very encouraging. UNMIL is a trusted brand. They certainly have belief and confidence in the work that UNMIL has done. We have been working very closely with government and its institutions in making sure that there is rule of law and law and order return to a post-conflict nation. And having been part of that process, I'm sure that they've actually seen the benefits to them individually and through all fabrics of society about the gains that have been made around peace. But now it's in the hands of Liberians. It's not the UN who will be responsible for peace, but certainly for the Liberian people. So they are certainly part of the peace-building process.
Is your typical Liberian, if there is such a person, safer now than they were 5 or 10 years ago?
Yes, I believe so. I believe that now we have seen law and order extended across the state, that we have a functioning traditional as well as supportive statutory systems in place that are providing a good framework and good governance. We're seeing decentralised services right across a range of government functions. And so I would believe now that many Liberians would actually say that, yes, there is a very different Liberia as to what it was before 2003.
A forgotten population of refugees from across Africa is living in limbo in Egypt, according to the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR. People who fled turmoil and conflict in countries like Eritrea, Somalia and Sudan and who are hoping to reach Europe are getting stranded in Egypt while waiting to be certified as asylum seekers. A large proportion of aid for the region has been directed towards refugees from Syria who've made their way to the North African country. Priyanka Shankar's report opens with the words of an asylum seeker from Sudan.
There is no money, there is no work, there is no house, there is no husband, no family, no babies, no anything. I cannot wait in here.
That was Sumaya, an asylum seeker from Sudan stranded in Egypt. She has been stuck in Cairo for 2 years waiting to be certified as a refugee. Sumaya's case is one among the many cases of African refugees who flee their countries seeking a new life but get stuck in Egypt awaiting the decision on their refugee status. With the world concentrating on Syrian refugees, the needs of these African asylum seekers are often overlooked, according to the UN's refugee agency. Tariq Argaz from the agency in Egypt explains why the refugees from Africa have become the forgotten population.
Unfortunately, protracted situation and long-lasting crisis in African countries continue to generate an influx of migrants and asylum seekers. Egypt, as a traditional route for migration towards Europe, is indeed witnessing an increase of attempts of people coming to the country. These people may be, they are treated as forgotten population sometimes because the operation in Egypt is receiving, for instance, a major part of funds for the crisis in Syria. Therefore, the funding for all other nationalities, for Africans, Iraqis, Yemenis, is not receiving as the sufficient amount of funding to cover all their needs.
Why do you think they're exactly coming to Egypt from places like Sudan and Eritrea? Is it a permanent solution for them to settle down there? Or are they looking for a better life in Europe? Or do they want to go back home at some point?
Normally, all the asylum seekers and refugees, they want to go back to their countries once the situation is stable, definitely. But from Sudan, for instance, Sudan and Egypt, they both have very close historical links and there is a long-lasting relationship between them. But Egypt currently is a stable country. So most of these asylum seekers, migrants as well, they come to Egypt. Some come to stay, and there is a minority that also comes to Egypt in order to try or to attempt to regularly cross to Europe.
You work every day a lot with so many of these refugees, and what are the common problems they face and how does that make you feel?
If we are talking about the non-Syrian population, the main difficulties that they experience in Egypt, I guess, is the lack of access to very important services like public health care facilities and public education. So it's important to mention that only Syrians and Sudanese registered with UNHCR have access to primary health care and public education. In the case of non-Syrians, UNHCR and its partners provide all necessary services like medical assistance, psychosocial assistance, educational opportunities at public, private and community schools, as well as financial assistance to the most vulnerable.
So if they're not registered, they get no assistance at all?
There are like two steps. First, they get what we call a yellow card, the asylum seeker card. With this card, they have access to all kind of assistance that we provide, UNHCR and its partners. And the second step is going through what we call the refugee status determination. It's an interview with the staff members of UNHCR where their status as refugees is going to be determined.
That report from Priyanka Shankar. And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN and Africa. And you can follow more of our programmes at radio.un.org. We are also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Matthew Wells.